Good morning, everyone. We're going to call the Academic Research and Student Affairs Committee to order. Could we please have the roll call?
Chair Geddes?
Here.
Vice Chair McAdoo? Regent Arascada?
There.
Regent Dubrava?
Here.
Regent Perkins?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. We will now move on to item number one, public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko? Okay.
No public comment in Elko at this time.
Is there any public comment in Reno?
There's no public comment in Reno.
Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? Sorry, Henderson. All right, seeing none, we'll close public. Oh. Don't forget to read the public comment. I'm not supposed to read it.
No. Nicole Thomas, president of UNLV GPSA. I don't have any prepared remarks today, but I did want to come here and thank you all for considering increasing graduate student stipends. You will hear a presentation today that will essentially talk about what graduate students need, both at UNR and UNLV. I have a master's degree now, which is so exciting. And I want to be able to contribute more to my community, to everyone I know. I love Las Vegas, and I want to be able to live here. And with the stipends that we have currently and the current housing prices, it makes that incredibly difficult for us. I know you all are in support of students, and I'm hoping that we could get your backing in this upcoming legislative session as well, just in advocating for an increase in our graduate student stipends. And I think that would be essential as part of the NC strategic planning. So once again, I just wanted to come up here and thank you all for considering this item. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you all have to say and think about our presentations. Thank you.
Thank you. Could you spell your last name?
Yes, Thomas, Thomas. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing none, now we'll go to item number two, consent items. Do I have a motion for approval of the consent items?
So moved.
Motion from Regent Perkins, second.
Second.
From Regent Arascada. Any questions or comments on the consent? Seeing none, and all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. We'll go to item number three, the Regents Awards for Possible Action. You can see the list of all the Regents Awards on the agenda there, and this is one of the fun things we get to do is put out awards and put in some cash, and there is one change to it on the Regents, Nevada Regents Rising Researcher Award. Crystal?
For the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. Currently, the provisions in board policy governing the Rising Researcher Award, which is given to essentially early career faculty who have been done well in research, it limits it to one award per institution per cycle. You will see in item 3E that UNR has two nominations. We have had cases in the past where institutions have come forward with multiple awards. I simply ask that the board, in your motion, recognize that you are giving authorization to exceed the limitation that is currently established in board policy. We will address this matter in item number 4, where we're expanding that particular provision, but for the purpose of showing that we're not violating board policy, simply note such in your motion.
And it's all
what she said.
That's a motion. Second? Or did I already get a second?
Second.
Second from Arascada. And one thing I would note with those limits and going beyond where we were is the institutions pay this one. It's not us paying those. So if they want to come up with the money and pay for more, so be it. So we have a motion, a second. No further discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. All right, that passes unanimously. If any of the award winners are here today, if you would like to stand up and be recognized, we'd truly appreciate it. This is why you're rising researchers and outstanding researchers and an outstanding faculty, is because you're not at our meeting. You're serving students. We'll go to item number 4, Handbook Revision, Nevada Regents Researcher Awards. Crystal.
For the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic Student Affairs, I bring to you a policy revision to Title IV, Chapter 1, Section 18. If you would please refer to the briefing paper and policy proposal that is included in your reference material. Starting on page 3 of the document provided, you will note that we are revising subsection 1 to provide that the rising researcher, and this is for the research institutions, which as you all know is UNR, UNLV, and DRI. Currently, there is that limitation for one faculty at each institution. It would now allow up to 3. This is a recommendation that comes to you from the Research Affairs Council. That is a council that I chair as Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs, and it is made up of the vice presidents for research at the research institutions. This does include, as you will see, Nevada State. That was also a revision that was made to board policy several years ago. I will note for the sake of history that over time, this award has broadened in its scope. Initially, there was one researcher award, and it was intended for an individual who had been a longstanding faculty member with a long career in research. Over time, we added to that distinguished award, which is now referred to as the distinguished award, a mid-career award and the rising researcher award. It is felt by the Research Affairs Council to maintain the prestige of the Distinguished Award and the Mid-Career Award that it would be continue to be limited at 1, but we would allow the institution to bring forward up to 3 for the Rising Researcher Award. As Chairman Geddes indicated, there is a fiscal note. Unfortunately, I apologize, it was not noted on the agenda, but if you look at page 2 of the briefing paper at the very bottom, the Rising Researcher Award includes a $2,000 cash stipend that is paid by the awarding institutions. Institutions who award multiple awards will provide the cash stipend for each award recipient up to 3 awards. So obviously, it is at the discretion of the institution and, of course, within whatever limitations they may have in terms of their budget. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions of the committee and recommend approval.
I have a motion for approval. Regent Perkins. Second from Regent Arascata. Any questions?
Discussion.
Regent Arascata.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Just on a side note, I move for approval as long as each institution has the means to afford the award of $5,000, because we're looking at 5K times 3 is $2,500.
Yeah.
Again.
It is discretionary, so yes, obviously the institution would bring forward what they can afford.
And Joe, for this one, Regent Arascata, for this one, the rising researcher, it's $2,000, not the $5,000.
Correct.
So.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 5, UNR program proposals, Sierra Nevada University program teach out. President Sandoval.
Good morning, Chair Geddes, Vice Chair McAdoo, Chancellor Rose, members of the committee. For the record, Brian Sandoval, President of the University of Nevada, Reno, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present this agenda item. I will go into more depth today with regard to the progress being made on the SNU acquisition in my campus update later on. But for this discussion, I bring to your attention the university's commitment to provide a path to graduation or teach-out plan for each and every one of the SNU students. I'm pleased to introduce our Executive Vice President, Provost, Dr. Jeff Thompson, to discuss the details of the proposed programs. And with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to present the Provost.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. For the record, Jeff Thompson, Provost, University of Nevada, Reno. So the University of Nevada, Reno continues the process of applying for the required approvals to provide a change in ownership from Sierra Nevada University to the part of the University of Nevada, Reno. As part of the approval process from our accrediting body, the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities, UNR submitted plans that ensured SNU students could complete their education in UNR degree programs with minimal disruption, or create a teach-out plan for each of the degree programs at SNU. For most of the SNU degree programs, we were able to provide an equivalent UNR degree program which minimally impacts the SNU students in the time to degree and the courses that they have already taken. There are three SNU degree programs that do not align well with UNR degree programs, and therefore the SNU students in those programs cannot graduate with equivalent degrees at UNR, which would create an undue hardship and impact on their educational aspirations. And these programs are the Bachelor of Arts in Education. This program prepares students for K through 12 teacher licensure. There are 13 students currently enrolled in the program. The Master of Arts in Teaching, which is a teaching licensure program with specializations in elementary, secondary, dual elementary, secondary, and special education. There are 126 students enrolled in this program. And the Master of Education, English Language Acquisition and Development, which prepares teachers to work with diverse student populations, including bilingual students and English language learners. And there are six students enrolled in this program. So there are 145 students enrolled in these three programs. So these SNU programs are offered on branch campuses in Reno and Henderson in space SNU currently leases. For all these three programs, we're requesting approval from the Board of Regents to offer these degrees as UNR degrees, and the students currently enrolled in the programs as part of the UNR teach-out program. UNR will not admit additional students into these degree programs, and if approved, the degree programs will sunset when the currently enrolled students have completed their degrees. And SNU offers these degrees with a combination of online and in-person classes. The degree programs are offered in spaces leased by SNU in Reno and Henderson. SNU has informed us that the leases for these two properties expire in 2024, and UNR will not pursue the leases going forward after the expiration of the leases. So with this summary explanation of the academic program proposals, UNR is requesting your approval, and I would be happy to answer any of your questions.
Do I have a motion for approval? Motion from Regent Arascata. Do I have a second? Second from Regent Perkins. Any questions or comments? Regent Arascata, did you have them?
Thank you. Appreciate it, Chair Geddes. Just three questions for you, Provost Thompson. Will UNR continue to lease the property? For clarity.
Regent Arascata, UNR will not continue the leases after they expire in 2024.
A couple more questions. What is UNR's commitment to meet the demand for teachers in both Washoe and Clark County?
Thank you, Regent Arascata. I have been approached by the Clark County School District and the Washoe County School District with what are our plans going forward. Both of these school districts recruit heavily through these degree programs. I'm commit to work with my colleagues at the other INSHE institutions to find other pipelines and degree paths for meeting the needs of the school districts in the state.
Thank you. And can University of Nevada, Reno assure that the degrees will be completed?
Yes, we will ensure that the students will have a path forward to complete their degrees in a timely manner.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Thompson.
Thank you. Regent Perkins, did you have a question?
Just a comment. Thank you, Chair Geddes. The way this came together so quickly, it's phenomenal. You guys have done an awesome amount of hard work to make this happen so quickly, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Regent Perkins. I must also commend our Senior Vice Provost, Dr. Jill Heaton, who's done an amazing amount of work to pull this all together so quickly. So thank you.
Seeing no other questions and comments, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
We will now go to item number 6, CSN program proposal, BAS, environmental conservation. President Zaragoza.
Mr. Chairman, Regents, Chancellor, colleagues, and guests, for the record, Federico Zaragoza. Here to present this item is Dr. James McCoy, Vice President of Academic Affairs of the College of Southern Nevada.
For the record, good morning. My name is James McCoy, Vice President for Academic Affairs at the College of Southern Nevada. Chair Geddes, good morning. Regents, good morning. It's my pleasure to present to you for consideration a new Bachelor's of Applied Science degree in the area of environmental conservation. The CSN Science faculty, with the support of Dr. Doug Sims, Dean for the CSN School of Science and Math, who stands with me today, have worked diligently to develop this direct-to-workforce degree. I'd also like to express gratitude to the leadership at UNLV, UNR, and NSC for their support of this BAS proposal. So this BAS is a non-calculus and non-graduate school pathway that's focused on developing students with technician-level skills. Graduates of this program will be able to attain skills for employment as a technician in support of a qualified biologist within this growing and demanding field of environmental conservation. Additionally, this BAS will provide a distinctive baccalaureate degree pathway for students who attained an Associate of Applied Science degree at CSN in environmental management. This program is designed to lead to one of several potential career paths. These could include environmental careers in the public sector, biology, chemistry, geology, and environmental scientists in the private sector as well. According to the United States Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics, careers in the environmental science technician areas are projected to grow by 11% through 2024. Additionally, according to the Bureau, environmental science technicians earn a mean salary of $71,360. So a large portion of Nevada, as you are all well aware, is public land managed by agencies of the federal government. In order for this land to be utilized for activities such as mining, water resourcing, ranching, development, technical environmental scientists will be needed for operations to interface with the managing agency. This often requires specific federal designations and qualifications that this degree would provide. Students in the degree program will qualify for specialists level training and employment. So this BAS in Environmental Conservation Technology, or technician program, would combine the synergies of three distinct and different disciplines at CSN to include biology, chemistry, and environmental science. We have 7 highly qualified, tenured faculty, 6 of whom have doctorate degrees in their field, who will teach the courses that are made up in this program. And the leadership of several environmental firms asked CSN to consider creating this Bachelor of Applied Science degree in the field of environmental conservation, focusing, and I want to emphasize, the technical aspects of the field. They have made it clear to us that they can no longer afford an undertrained workforce in this new economy. CSN, of course, is aware that the knowledge and applied hands-on skills are being demanded by employers, end users, students themselves. Industry employers have indicated that hands-on skills learned at the baccalaureate level are a must when considering their new hires. So this bachelor's degree program focuses on, again, developing the technicians with the skills they need to be immediately employable and job-ready for our industry partners. Speaking of our partners, I'd like to thank them for their endorsement in this new degree program at CSN proposal, as is evidenced by their written support included with the packet in front of you today. We're especially grateful to them for their contributions in helping us right-line the courses that make up this program. This new BAS in environmental conservation has the support and backing from industry stakeholders such as Shoshone Village, Western Technologies, the United States Bureau of Land Management, United States Forest Service, Nevada Department of Wildlife, Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, SWCA, Environmental Consultants, and Tekeron. Board, Regent Chair, I brought Doug Sims, our Dean of Science and Math, with me today, who happens to be an environmental by profession, environmental management by profession, to answer any questions you may have. I appreciate the time this morning.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval? Motion from Regent McAdoo?
Motion. Yes.
Second from Regent Perkins?
Sure.
I do really appreciate the letters of support from the government and private agencies. That's very helpful when we're developing a new program. So I do appreciate that. Are there any other questions or comments? Regent Perkins.
Thank you. Just a quick question. How many students do you expect And what is the growth opportunity for this particular degree?
Currently, we have a pipeline degree called the AAS in Environmental Management. We have 167 pipeline in there right now. For this particular program, we actually have a list of interested students sitting at 186. That's interested. It doesn't mean they'll all come. What we find when the students approach us, we actually interview them first. If they're graduate school bound, we actually push them off to UNLV, Nevada State, or UNR, because that's where they need to go, not our program, because our program is a terminal degree. So that's the pipeline's pretty good.
Thank you.
Regent McAdoo, did you have a question? Okay. Any other questions or comments? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Now we go to item number 7, CSN program proposal, BAS Environmental Laboratory Sciences. Now you're getting close to my heart.
We saved the best for last, Regent Geddes. James McCoy, again, for the record, Vice President for Academic Affairs of the College of Southern Nevada. Chair Geddes, Regents, we are pleased to bring this new BAS proposal to you as well this morning. New Bachelor's of Applied Science degree in the area of Environmental Laboratory Sciences. The CSN Science faculty, along again with our Dean, Dr. Doug Sims, are enthusiastically and diligently working with industry and business partners to develop this particular program. And like the previous, I'm very pleased with our colleagues and leadership at UNR, UNLV, and Nevada State College for their endorsement and support for this proposal. Again, like the previous, this is a non-calculus, non-graduate school track that is focused again on technician-level skills, this time instead of with the partnership of a trained biologist, it's in the context of a trained and qualified chemist in support of that chemist. Students who earn this degree will be employable, again, as a technician, in this context, in a commercial environmental laboratory setting. Student learning will focus on specialist-level environmental laboratory skills with core knowledge in chemistry. The program will produce trained environmental laboratory technicians that can enter the workforce in either the private or the governmental sectors, filling empty and needed environmental laboratory technician positions within the Nevada and the surrounding regions. This program is designed to lead to one of several career pathways. This could include environmental careers in the public sector, biochemical, inorganic and organic chemistry, and environmental scientist in the private sector. As noted earlier, when we talked about the job growth and the projections for this particular field in environmental management, that projection by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics is expected to grow 11% by 2024. Further, according to the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics, the mean salary for technicians in testing laboratories is $44,190 with an anticipated growth career outlook of 7%. Technicians working in medical laboratories earn a mean salary of $68,910 with an industry growth outlook of 26%. We have 8 highly qualified, tenured, full-time chemistry faculty, 5 of whom have doctorate degrees in their field who will teach the courses in this program as part of their regular teaching load. And again, we're grateful for the support of our local and regional employers who sit on CSN's Industry Advisory Committee in this discipline and have endorsed this new BAS in Environmental Lab Sciences. In fact, our thanks goes to the City of Henderson, Clark County Water Reclamation District, City of Las Vegas, Southern Nevada Water Authority, Las Vegas Water District, Alpha Analytical, Wet Laboratory, Silver State Analytical Laboratories, and others. There are several letters of support provided with the proposal in your packet in front of you this morning. I'd like to highlight just a couple of quotes from our industry partner employers. Stan Van Wagen, laboratory manager for the Southern Nevada Water Authority, said, and I quote, CSN's proposed BAS in environmental lab sciences with an emphasis on laboratory skills and hands-on education will produce highly trained technicians for many well-paying local and regional positions that are opening in the environmental testing industry. Michael Arasada, manager, water quality lab of the City of Henderson, said, the City of Henderson employs laboratory assistants with experience in environmental testing. He went on to note that the applicant pool that he is seeing, quote, lack relevant experience and or training with instrumentation and methods in their laboratory design. And finally, Daniel C. Fisher, Deputy General Manager for Clark County Water Reclamation District, said, we are excited about this first-of-its-kind program in Nevada as we expect it will produce technician-level graduates who can hit the ground running as analysts in our laboratories. Mr. Chair, thank you for your kind consideration today. Board, thank you. And Dr. Sims and I stand ready to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, and I'm going to take the privilege of making the motion on this one.
I'll second it.
And a second from Regent McAdoo. And I used to run the chemistry lab for the Department of Ag, and we would bring in techs and train them up, and then private industry or Southern Nevada Water Authority would hire them away at twice the salary we were paying. So there's a great need in the community for it. And as I said, I appreciate this program coming forward.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Regent Perkins.
Thank you. Same question about how many students do you expect? And
In addition to the 167 in the current pipeline, we have another 96 showing interest. Again, if they have a graduate school goals, we're going to push them on to one of the four-year research schools, UNLV, Nevada State, or UNR.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Chair Geddes.
Regent Arascotta.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, if the demand is there, would there be plans or options for increasing the size of enrollment?
I think there could be. Right now it's a limited entry program, but if that demand does come at some point, we would readdress it with CSN leadership and then go from that point forward.
Regent Arascotta, James McCoy, if I may, Chair. James McCoy, for the record, right now our projections on enrollment are based on existing resources and faculty and laboratory support space on campus to support the numbers that we provided this morning. But indeed, as with all of our pipelines for workforce pathways particularly, as the demand increases, our resource allocation for more faculty and laboratory space in this context would also go with that. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Regent McAdoo? Nope. You're just getting ready to vote. Yeah, I see that. Yeah. I would offer to help teach, but you can't do gas chromatography, mass spectrometry online. That's just doesn't work. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Item number 8, TMCC program proposal, AS and data science. President Hilgersum.
So good morning, Regents, colleagues, and guests. Karen Hilgersum, for the record, I am so pleased today with the two proposals that are before you. A lot of collaboration and community building and work has gone into it. And it's also my pleasure to introduce Vice President Dr. Jeff Alexander, who will present the proposals.
Good morning. Thank you, President Hilgersum. Good morning, Chair Geddes, members of the ARSA committee, and presidents and colleagues. For the record, I'm Jeffrey Alexander, Vice President of Academic Affairs at Truckee Meadows Community College. I come before you today with a proposal for an Associate of Science degree in data science. This is a 60-credit-hour degree, and it will be the first such two-year degree program in Nevada. Currently, our state offers no associate degree program to prepare students for a career in data as a data analyst or in data science. And this sometimes begs the question, what exactly is data science? Students of data science learn how to use data analysis tools and programs such as Python, R, and SQL to analyze real-world data to find effective solutions. They learn how to create statistical models that are applicable in a wide array of fields, including business, finance, logistics, marketing, science, and student learning assessment, among others. Our proposed AS program plans to build these fundamental skills in programming, querying, and statistical analysis. In today's job market, data science is one of the fastest growing fields. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that the job outlook for data scientists and other mathematical computational sciences is projected to increase by 31.4% between 2020 and 2030. This growth rate is much faster than the average across all occupations. Additionally, in a biennial report published in January by GOED, the Office of Workforce Innovations pointed to the value of completing a degree or certificate in data analytics or data analytics certification programs. An associate degree takes this one step further, enabling students to pursue a degree pathway parallel to computer science that focuses on the skills needed for careers in data science. Regarding transfer, our proposed AS degree would articulate seamlessly to the four-year BA and BS degrees in data science offered at Nevada State College, enabling students to pursue a degree pathway parallel to computer science as well. This in turn leads to a master's degree programs in statistics and data science offered at both UNR and UNLV. As for resources, TMCC possesses the necessary facilities, personnel, equipment, and computer labs to deliver this program with fidelity. This is an interdisciplinary program, importantly. It benefits greatly from existing courses in related areas such as computer science, mathematics, and so on, which are already staffed with very, very qualified faculty. The salaries of the faculty and staff working in these programs are thus already budgeted. Concerning enrollment, our projections are an enrollment target of 8 student majors by 2025, which will generate revenues equivalent to estimated expenditures, making the program cost neutral. We estimate 4 students to begin the program in fall 2022 based upon interest already expressed. Recruitment will focus especially on student populations that are currently underrepresented in computer science. As part of our continuing effort to increase the number of women and minorities pursuing STEM and computer science degrees and careers, respectfully submitted for your consideration.
Thank you. And way to answer Regents Perkins' question. Do I have a motion for approval? Motion from Regent Perkins, second from Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Questions, comments? Hearing none, seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 9. Yeah, you can stay standing. The TMCC program proposal, Bachelor of Architecture.
Chair Geddes, once again, thank you, members of the ARSA committee. Also, Chancellor Rose. Once again, Jeffrey Alexander, Vice President for Academic Affairs at Truckee Meadows Community College. I come before you today with a proposal for a professional degree known as a Bachelor of Architecture. I am joined today, I should point out, by a few colleagues. First of all, Mr. Craig Maybust at our NSHE office in Reno. He is our interim dean of technical sciences and also our lead faculty in architecture at TMCC. And he is joined by several members of our architectural program advisory board who are themselves professional architects, and they are standing by to answer any questions you may have. This professional degree, importantly, is neither a Bachelor of Arts, nor a Bachelor of Science, nor a Bachelor of Applied Science. This is a unique named degree known uniquely as a Bachelor of Architecture. It aims to meet the urgent need for professional architects not only in Northern Nevada, which has unique and diverse climates, but also the urgent needs of a vast, unserved region that includes the entire state of Nevada and beyond. While there is an accredited Master of Architecture program at UNLV, there is no accredited Bachelor of Architecture program in our state and none closer to Reno than a 4-hour drive to the Academy of Art University in San Francisco. To the north, the nearest accredited program is at the University of Oregon. There are 7 programs along the Pacific coast of California, and to the south, the nearest accredited Bachelor of Architecture program is at ASU in Tempe, Arizona. Because no bachelor's degree program in Nevada meets these minimum standards, the professional architects on our advisory board tell us that they frequently turn away job seekers because they do not possess the credentials necessary for hire. For this reason, the Nevada State Board of Architecture has shared its very strong support for our proposal. Concerning the curriculum, our proposed 5-year degree totals 150 credits, which is the minimum number of credits required by the accrediting body, the National Architectural Accrediting Board, NAAB. It further meets the minimum licensure requirements for architects found in Nevada revised statutes. And importantly, our proposed degree builds upon 3 existing awards at TMCC. These are stackable. We currently offer an Associate of Applied Science in Architecture. That's a 60-credit degree, which itself includes a 31-credit certificate of achievement in architectural drafting skills and 2 related skills certificates that total 21 credits. These will serve as the laddered components of our Bachelor of Architecture program. With regard to enrollment, we project that our Bachelor of Architecture majors will grow to 16 by 2027. By 2030, we aim to produce up to 20 graduates annually, which is the optimum number according to the professional architects who serve on our advisory board. This will create the fastest and most affordable route to licensure for students, including those from historically marginalized groups. Today, 43% of our architecture students are Hispanic and 54% are female. Our advisory board is very excited about this chance to diversify their profession. Regarding resources, TMCC possesses the necessary facilities and personnel and equipment to deliver this program. The salaries of faculty and support staff are already budgeted because they already serve our AAS program. And the salary of 1 planned full-time faculty hire who would support instruction above the 200 level is budgeted as well.
Our enrollment projections targeting 16 student majors by 2027 will generate revenues equivalent to estimated expenditures. As for transfer, our proposed program offers a natural transfer pathway for graduates wishing to further their education with an accredited Master of Architecture program and that degree at UNLV. It also will strengthen existing ties and transfer pathways with the College of Engineering at UNR. Concerning employment prospects, Owen and GOED recognize that architecture is a growing field, and Dieter projects this sector to grow by 194 jobs, or 17%, by 2028. Finally, our proposal has received letters of support from several key bodies, including the Nevada State Board of Architecture, Interior Design and Residential Design, the Truckee Meadows Regional Planning Agency, the Nevada Chapter of the American Society of Landscape Architecture, and Hawkins & Associates, an architectural design and interior firm in Reno, Nevada. Once again, respectfully submitted for your consideration today.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval?
Regent Geddes.
Yes,
I proudly endorse. I make a motion for acceptance.
Have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Second, Regent McAdoo. Any questions or comments?
Regent Arriscada.
Oh, Regent Carvalho, then Regent Arriscada.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I realize I'm not a member of this committee, but I did have a question regarding this degree, but also all of the degrees, and again, maybe I'm just missing something, but is there any consideration for differential fees with these programs? They seem to be very specific in their scope, and we've heard often that these types of programs require specialized faculty members that often need pay commensurate with what's happening in the private sector. So I was wondering about that, specifically with this one, because this is the agenda item we're on right now, but generally as well. And I'm happy to take that up offline if that's more appropriate.
For the record, Crystal Abbott, perhaps I can just elaborate on what the board's current policy is in regards to differential fees, because those normally do not come to this committee for consideration. They would come to the full board, and as many board members who have been with us for some time, you're aware of that schedule. It comes at a regular time at the last quarterly board meeting of the year. And we have a long history with this committee. You are focused on the program itself, the academics, the curriculum, however, resources related to revenue. In regards to something like a differential program fee are considered within a separate purview. So we always ask the institutions. That doesn't come forward as part of this. And part of the reason for doing that is because there's certain tracking that occurs on differential program fees, and there are certain issues that occur with respect to, for example, the new program review. And we try to keep those in separate buckets. So while the institutions may, within their own right, want to recommend a differential program fee for consideration, it does not come forward as part of this. This is just purely approval of the academic program. However, I will defer to Jeff in regards to whether or not they have plans for such a fee with respect to this program.
Thank you very much, Chair Geddes, if I may. Regent Carvalho, we have no plans for a differential fee at this time. And with regard to hiring the qualified instructors who possess the necessary credential, important to note that our lead faculty member in architecture presently, Mr. Mavis, whom I mentioned, is himself a licensed architect in landscape architecture. And architecture is, of course, recognized federally as a STEM program at this time as of recent years. So in this regard, professional architects can be sought and can be pursued as qualified hires at this time, and we do not perceive the need for a differential fee at present.
But it may be one that you would have to pursue. I know architecture, UNLV, is one of the differential fee programs that we have because of the high cost of faculty.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for that clarification. I appreciate it.
Regent Arriscada, did you have a question?
Not anymore, thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other questions or comments, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. We'll now go to WNC program change, the AAS and paramedicine. President Delpy.
Hi, good morning, Committee, Chair Geddes, Chancellor Rose, members.
I will present on this, and I'll give you some details on it. I can spin my chair around. I'm serving in both roles as the officer in charge and provost, but I do have some support from a coordinator of our programs in the Reno office if needed. This is a program change. Our paramedicine program is a certificate of achievement program that we first launched in 2020. That is a 51-credit certificate program, which I believe is on its way to an associate degree. And when we reevaluated it after the first class went through in 2021, we realized that by adding some gen ed in, we could bring this to an associate degree level. We do not feel we need the certificate, so we opted for a change of the program from a certificate to an associate degree. Associate of Applied Science degree. It's adding 9 credits. Those are general education credits. It meets the guidelines passed after the initial program in 2021 for the national standards. And as to note, we've put 2 classes through, 100% pass rate, 100% placement rate. This program serves our rural communities with the shortage of all kinds of healthcare workers, including EMS and paramedics. So with that, we put forward the change of the program from a certificate to an Associate of Applied Science degree, meaning that we will have an EMT certificate degree that steps into an AAS degree as paramedicine for the student's option.
Kyle, just real quick, what were your conversations with President Hilgersum and TMCC? Because I know we had that program and we shut it down due to low enrollment, and I'm just wondering how that works. Either one.
So, Karin Hilgersum for the record. We've had good discussions and conversations, and TMCC is in support of the request on the part of WNC. And we appreciate those collaborations very much, by the way.
And how would this program differentiate itself from the TMCC program enough to attract students? Is it really just the rural nature, or?
Right, so Kyle Dalpe, Western Nevada College, I appreciate President Hilgersum's comments and support. We have what I call traditional service areas. We are a rural serving institution. We have 6 counties south of Washoe County. We do hit South Lake a little bit because the Douglas County goes up to that region. So we are primarily looking at our partners in our rural communities, much of which are suffering from however you want to term it, the great retirement, the great resignation, the lack of people in those communities. For us, it's a different game. It's finding enough students from multiple agencies to create a cohort, not just one cohort in one city, because an agency may have one paramedic, 2 or 3 that run a lot of the volunteer type programs as well. So we're looking at that as part of our overall public safety, allied health programs in our rural communities.
Thank you, and I would entertain a motion with one caveat. Since this is a program change, it wouldn't normally have to go through the 3-year, 5-year review as far as enrollments and how the program is doing financially. So I would like to add in that we add the 3-year and 5-year review as part of the motion. And do I have a motion for that?
I'll place that motion.
Regent Arascata's the motion. Do I have a second? Second from Regent Perkins.
Second.
Any more questions or comments? Vice Chancellor Abbott, did you have?
If I can just clarify, clarify for the purpose of the minutes, the provision of board policy that requires the review of new programs that are considered less than 10 years old, as the chairman indicated, this program as a program change would not normally be subject to that. However, there's nothing to preclude the committee from making that recommendation, including it in the motion. And for the purpose of the minutes, I would note, as we often go back and research this after the fact, it is Title IV, Chapter 14, Section 6, are the provisions that we are requesting that it be subject to with respect to regular review within the next 10 years.
Seeing no other questions and comments, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Item number 11, WNC program proposal, AAS Fire Science.
Thank you. Kyle Dalpy, Western Nevada College again. And I'll answer your last question first. We did enter into conversations with TMCC on this program because it is very similar. Several programs that we have at Western Nevada College do mirror similar ones to TMCC and other schools, and we vet that through the Common Course curriculum. We stay looking at what our partners need in our rural communities. The supporters on this one, the Fire Science program, Carson Fire, of course, but North Lyon, Central Lyon, Churchill County, our rural partners. We're just starting to explore options into Hawthorne, especially in Mineral County High School. So it's a similar program to the other schools around the state, however, serving our unique populations. This would be a Associate of Applied Science degree, again, Fire Science, 62 and a half credits. We're looking at starting it next year as early as fall 2022. Meets the standards for that level of program. Per the agencies, and I think I'll leave it at that. We're expecting a cohort of maybe 9 to 12 students first time around, if that. And we will build this on a part-time adjunct basis, not full-time staff, at least at this time.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval?
I so move.
Motion from Regent McAdoo, second. Second, Regent Perkins. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Now we'll go to item number 12. This is information only, but the history of the Governor Gwynn Millennium Scholarship, Davis, and we have Associate Vice Chancellor Davis.
Good morning, everyone. Renee Davis, Academic and Student Affairs for the NG System Office. So I'm here today to talk about the Governor Gwynn Millennium Scholarship. GGMS is the shortcut term that we use. And we're bringing this presentation to you for a couple reasons. It's been a really long time since we brought a presentation on the Millennium Scholarship to the board. And also, we thought it very good timing due to the SB 128 financial aid study that's underway right now to have a discussion about the Millennium Scholarship and provide you some updated information. So today we'll give you a little background and history, talk about eligibility, utilization, and then some information on program outcomes, which we're really pleased about. One outcome report that we're able to do at the end that we haven't done before. So anxious to share that with you all. But let's start at the beginning. So 1999, many of you know, 1999 session is when the Millennium Scholarship was approved by the legislature. And it was established, and then the first class of eligible students was from the class, high school graduating class of 2000. The funding for the Millennium Scholarship originally came from tobacco settlement funds, but something that is not always realized by folks across the state is that the legislature has regularly been infusing that fund with general fund monies. Also in 2005, unclaimed property was allocated to the Millennium Trust Fund, and that continues to this day. So on this next slide, you'll see that in particular in the last three sessions, the infusions have been growing and they've been great. And that's because we have an increasing Nevada high school graduating class size. And it's more than doubled since the beginning of the program. So approximately somewhere into the high 40s, lower 50% of the class every year qualifies. So as the class grows, the cost grows. And that's what the program was intended to do, was to get students to college. I did skip over, apologies on the last slide, but really the reason the Governor Gwynn Millennium Scholarship was established, Governor Gwynn and the legislature felt very passionately that we needed to keep more of our Nevada students in Nevada to go to college, rather than sending them out of state and then them potentially not coming back into the state. So that was the whole goal. Which institutions have students who can use Millennium Scholarship? It's, of course, all of the NG public institutions, but it also includes Roseman University and, for the next little while, Sierra Nevada University. And you can see here we put the NRS section that has the eligibility requirements for institutions, but it's basically regionally accredited, established in Nevada, but also a not-for-profit institution. So that's the citation there. Now, in terms of initial student eligibility, things have changed a little bit from the beginning of the program, but these are the current eligibility requirements. So, of course, we all know the student needs to graduate from a public or private high school in Nevada, be a resident of Nevada for the last 2 years of high school. There's also the board-established core curriculum, and that also has been around now for a while, but it was not there at the outset. I believe it first applied to the class of 2009. I have some footnotes on the future slides. And the 3.25 GPA, that has been in place for quite some time, but at the beginning of the program, it started out lower than that. So I also have slides on those requirements in a minute, so we'll show a little history. And of note, students do not fill out an application for the scholarship. It's based on a file being submitted to the treasurer's office from the high school or the high school district. And the only population that does need to apply individually would be homeschooled students. So here's that history I was talking about just a second ago. Between 2000 and 2004, the GPA requirement was 3.0, and you can see that it went up gradually to 3.25 where it sits now. And then the core curriculum was added in 2009, and that is still remains. And then in 2015 session, beginning with class of 16, students were able to, if they did not meet the high school GPA requirement, they were able to meet that requirement by a score on a college entrance exam. So ACT, SAT, and that also, that score is also set in board policy. Another change that just happened recently was between 2007 and 21, there was a requirement that a student make a declaration of citizenship or intent to become a citizen, and that was removed in 21. Of note, there still is what is termed as an affidavit of eligibility, but this language has been removed. So it's mostly a formality that the student is saying that they meet the eligibility requirements as reported by the districts and the high schools. And then continuing eligibility, we talk about this a lot. There's this two-strike rule, which means that students who don't maintain eligibility and they lose it, they can regain it. But once they regain it, if they lose it again, they lose the scholarship for good. And the GPA requirement for this is 2.75. And again, of note, it's a semester GPA. So that's a little different than having a cumulative GPA, which is, you know, takes into consideration the student's history, and under the semester GPA rule, it's a little tougher because a student could otherwise be a 4.0 student and maybe have one bad semester and lose eligibility for the scholarship. So it definitely ratcheted up when it changed in the early years from a cumulative GPA to a semester GPA. And then also students have 6 years after high school graduation date to use the scholarship. There are a few exceptions in the eligibility NRS and based on board policy. One is that students who have a parent who's in the U.S. Armed Forces, they're excused from that 2 years in Nevada residency requirement. That is not it's not very commonly used, but it is there. And then there are also exceptions to the six-year requirement for using your scholarship, and that period could be lengthened by up to another 6 years based on service in the U.S. Armed Forces or in a charitable, religious, or public service assignment. So there's a process for students to fill out some paperwork, and then we would extend that and notify the treasurer's office, and they're able to use that scholarship for some additional time. And then also students with documented disability can also file a request for an exception, and that could be an exception to the number of credits for minimum enrollment or the timeline, so they can have additional time beyond that traditional 6 years. So this slide just shows a little more detail of what I was talking about earlier, the changes in the GPA requirement. But more importantly, you can see that growth in the high school graduating class from almost 13,000 to 30.5 in 2020. So 20 years, it more than doubled. And you can see what I was saying about the percentage eligible. It kind of flits around a little here and there over the years, but it really hovers around the 50% mark most years. And also the utilized scholarships, that percentage or in that number will continue to grow throughout the first through the 6 years window. So the 2020 class would have until 2026. So you'll see that 54% will continue to increase, for example. So let's talk a little bit about award amounts. Award amounts are based on the per credit amount established in statute and the student's credit load. So for community colleges, and this has not changed at all since the beginning of the program. So 20 years ago, it was the same amount. $40 per credit at the community college. The minimum is 9 credits and the maximum is 15 credits. Now, when the program started, the minimum at the community colleges was 6. That was raised in 2015. And then the state college and the university, so 60 and then 80, and then 12 credits minimum, 15 credits maximum. And again, the 15 credit max was raised in 2015. Regardless, the students have a total of $10,000 that they could use over the 6 years. But again, it's not every student will necessarily get the $10,000 because it's based on that per credit amount. And for summer school, there is no minimum enrollment level, but they do have to have been funded either in the prior spring or the following fall in order to get funding for summer. And that, you know, that the intention there is to make sure these are students who are continuing to stay in Nevada and not going out of state and then coming home for summer, taking a class and getting funded with Millennium. So that's how that works. This is just another look at the award amount and in comparison to the registration fees. So when the scholarship first started, 2000-2001, or the first recipients were funded, you can see that at the community colleges, if the student was in 12 credits, in 2000, if the student was in 15 credits, you can see their funding level. And then in 2009-10, that bar is slightly different because the max was 12 credits then. And then in those later years, again, we reinstated the 15 credits was the maximum. So basically what you see there is something that probably is pretty obvious, which is that because the award amount has not changed over 20 years, the value in terms of what students are paying in registration fees has gone down. So it's still an award that helps students and is counted on it by many families, but the value definitely has decreased, and there's a much larger gap that needs to be covered by either other aid or by the families. And so with the state college, there was no 2000, so 2001, 2002, it covered exactly, the registration fees were exactly $60 per credit, so it was a wash, and then there's the same progression there that you'll see for the other two tiers. And then at the universities, interestingly enough, if you look again just at registration fees, the minimum, the per credit award of 80 per credit was slightly higher than the registration fee. So that's why you see that negative 180 there in the bottom of the bar for 2000-2001. Okay, so now I'm going to shift to the program outcomes. So first of all, just some basic stuff about how many dollars are awarded and what institutions are the students attending and receiving dollars at. So you can see here that we've broken the totals down by the four-year and the two-year institutions. And you can see that really it's been pretty consistent. Close to 90% of the funding has gone to students attending four-year institutions in the Millennium Program, with the remainder going to students at the two-year institutions. And you can see the breakdown there for 1920, $35 million at the four-year institutions versus about $4.5 million at the two-year institutions, for a total of almost $40 million for the year. So when I first arrived in the system office maybe about 10 years ago, it was pretty consistent. The numbers for the Millennium annual disbursements were right around in the $25 million range for a few years, and then we started to see the uptick. Part of that is due to the changes in 2015 to put the max at 15 credits, and also with a little influx of additional students in terms of the ACT-SAT substitute for the GPA requirement. And so, but just figuring out what I did here with this slide. Okay, so this is just the same slide, numbers rather than dollars. So you can see again the breakdown. It's a little bit different, so you can see that there, in terms of the numbers of students, the percentage is a little higher at the 2 years than it is in dollars. And again, that's because of that $40 versus $60 or $80 differential. So, and then also the amount of students in 15 credits is higher at the four-year institution. So between those two things, it shifts the distribution just a tad. And then we always want to make sure we take a look at the distribution by race and ethnicity for these awards. And so here, this slide is from 1920. You can see it's kind of a lot for one slide, so I only gave you 1 year. But it is pretty similar from year to year. And in most, not all, but most cases, the recipients who are non-white of the Millennium population of the school is a little bit higher than the non-white registrants at the school. So you can see those figures there. And we took those from IPEDS. And then, of course, the rest is from the Millennium data in the student data warehouse. So here's the part we're particularly proud of and think is very interesting. So what we did was we're trying to figure out how do we show some, Crystal likes to use the term return on investment. I don't necessarily love that term, but some sort of outcomes to show the success of students in the program. And again, this really relates to the work that's being done for the SB 128 study. We wanted to see what we could figure out using the data that we had available to us in the student data warehouse. So we took a look at the number of recipients, the total disbursements, students who completed degree, and then the percentage of students from that class to completing the degree. So you can see the columns across. And we did it by high school graduating class, and we used the six-year eligibility window as a marker for completions. Now, of course, students do complete degrees after 6 years, but we wanted to do something consistent because, of course, if you started in 2000, you had many more years than this latest class. We ended at 2015 because, again, since we went back to 6 years, we wanted to make sure we had that full time period for a full comparison. So going back, you can see we started out about 37.2% of students who got at least one disbursement of Millennium graduated within that 6 years from high school graduation. Now, keep in mind, this is not a graduation rate, and the reason it's not a graduation rate is we're starting with the high school graduating class, but the student might have entered at any point within that six-year window. So it's not like our first-time cohort that we normally use when you do an actual rate. Nevertheless, it's pretty informative. We, in 2000, 37.2% completed a degree within 6 years. And then when you go all the way forward to 2015, it's up to 54%, which is actually quite a good percentage. And we think that this is most likely related to a couple things. One is the increasing initial eligibility requirement. So students coming in had more credentials and more of the training that was needed, for example, the core curriculum. And we also know, you know, there's an impact from the K-12 reforms that have been made. And we are, like I said, we're really excited about it. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there, but we were happy to see these numbers looking good. And we can see that it really is making not only a difference in the individual students' lives, but for the state. It is helping to produce graduates for the state. So, and then this is some other really good news. As you can see, if you break down that data and look discreetly at each race or ethnicity group, and you look at the percentage of recipients from that group who graduated, you can see that in every category, there's been an increase. I will note that the Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander, that one, as many of you realize, the Asian category was disaggregated between the 2 years we're looking at, so that's why there's only one bar there. But in all cases, there's been great improvement in the graduation percentage of students graduating who received the Millennium Scholarship. So great news. I'm going to pause there. That was a lot of information. Are there any questions?
Any questions? Regent McAdoo?
I don't have any questions, but I want to thank you for the information because I think it's really important for us to know that. I get asked questions about it all the time in my community. So thank you. Good job.
Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. This might seem like a silly question, but since there's a six-year time span on this, if a student potentially went out of state for school and then came back, is this eligible for graduate degrees as well or just bachelor's and below?
Thank you for that question. Renee Davis, for the record. It is undergraduate students only, so any student, once they've, they could get actually technically a second bachelor's, although the money would run out pretty quickly, but no graduate degrees. It's all undergraduate.
So I do have another question. I do have a question, I guess.
Regent McAdoo.
Thank you to Regent Carvalho. It triggered that. So let's say graduate from high school went to school in California, mm-hmm. and then decided they missed Nevada and came back to Nevada their sophomore year. They could still be eligible. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Renee Davis, for the record. And they would still have that same six-year eligibility window, so they would have maybe lost a year, but right. they still would have, in that example, 5 years to use the up to the 10,000. So absolutely.
Thanks for the clarification.
You're welcome.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, it was for information only. Thank you, Renee. We will now go to item number 13, graduate assistantships and stipends. Another information only. Crystal, do you want to introduce it? Or?
For the record, Crystal Abba. The matter of graduate assistantships and stipends came to our attention recently, and I believe it was a constituent letter from a student from one of the institutions. In addition, as we have gone on our roadshow for the budget presentations, it is a matter that came up both at UNR and at UNLV. So we requested that both institutions present on this, mostly to give the committee an opportunity to understand what some of the challenges are that students are facing, but also to talk about how those stipends are established, because this is a way that institutions recruit students. And obviously, we want the highest caliber students that we can find possible within our graduate program. So we asked them to put this together. There is a lot of really good information in here, and I think they've done an amazing job in terms of telling the story with some comparison data. And again, it's about the challenges that some of these students face. So with that, I will defer to Provost Hebe. Thank you.
Thank you for asking for this item, Chair Geddes and Vice Chair Del Carlo and Regents. As Crystal said, this is one of the key issues for competitiveness for the institutions. And I think I speak for the presidents and provosts of both institutions to say we understand our mission, as Crystal said, to attract the best and brightest students to Nevada and provide them a world-class education. And this is an area where we are really struggling with competitiveness compared to other R1 peers. And I'll just say that I have a son who is now getting his doctoral degree at a public R1 university. And one of the primary considerations he had was the level of support that he would get for his graduate student stipend. And so I really want to thank Dean Corrigan and Dean Say for putting this information together. And again, thank you for hearing this important information to help us be competitive R1 research universities.
He's taller than I am. Good morning. Thank you so much, Provost Heavey. Good morning, Chair Geddes, Regents, Chancellor Rose, Presidents, friends and colleagues both in the room and online. For the record, I am Kate Hausbeck-Corgan. I'm the Vice Provost for Graduate Education and Dean of the Graduate College at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And I just want to thank you for the invitation to be here with you today to talk about graduate assistantships and stipends at Nevada's R1 universities. And you'll notice the title of the presentation is Nevada's R1 Universities. We decided to come to you today to do a collaborative presentation because the issue that we're here to talk about is not a North issue or a South issue. It's an issue that impacts all graduate students across the state of Nevada. And so we're here to talk about the challenges we're both facing and to ask for your partnership to find solutions to move forward. So, Dean Day.
For the record, David Zay, Vice Provost for Graduate Education, Dean of the Graduate School at the University of Nevada, Reno. Good morning, everyone. Thank you. I'd really like to thank Chair Geddes for inviting us to give this presentation. It's a true honor to be able to talk about my favorite subject, which is graduate education. And also, it's a real privilege to do this as a sort of a tag team effort with my esteemed colleague from UNLV, Kate Corrigan. Hopefully, I can figure out how to make the slides work. Okay, so graduate education is the crown jewel of the American educational system. More than 60% of all Nobel laureates have earned their doctoral degrees from U.S. institutions over the last 60 years or so. And the Carnegie system has recognized the importance of both recruitment and retention of graduate students. If you look at the criteria that are used in the Carnegie ranking, there's research expenditures in STEM, there's research expenditures in non-STEM fields, there are the number of PhD-trained research scientists, and then all of the rest of the categories have to do with earned doctorates. That is the number of doctoral degrees conferred per year. So they're divided into STEM fields, social sciences, the humanities, and also professional fields. And really, if you lump all of those together, that's the single most important factor in determining a university's Carnegie classification score. So why does that matter? Well, graduate students go on to become groundbreaking researchers and scholars. They advance incredibly important fields like molecular medicine, genomics, public health, epidemiology, the development of new vaccines. They also enrich our culture through their contributions in the humanities and the fine arts. And if you're trying to recruit good faculty and retain good faculty to your institution, probably the single most important thing is the quality of the graduate students at that institution. Not only that, graduate students do a whole lot for universities while they're there. And so a typical PhD student can serve for 4 to 6 years in their program. They're involved in teaching. They're involved in furthering research programs. They mentor and educate undergraduates. And they really do contribute to workforce development through entrepreneurship, forming new startups. And they pay a lot of taxes, too, because over their lifespan, they earn about $1 to $2 million more than someone who has just a bachelor's degree. Okay, so we're actually going to have a pretty big ask at the end of this presentation in terms of additional support for graduate student stipends and also for new doctoral positions. And I think in order to make that ask, we have to make the case for the fact that both of our universities have made really outstanding progress in graduate education over the last 8 years or so. So we're going to talk a little bit about this, and hopefully we can coordinate our activities. I'll say a little bit about enrollment trends for the University of Nevada, Reno since 2014. So in 2014, our university recognized that we really needed to put more effort into recruiting and retaining graduate students, and they created my position. You know, at the time, the graduate school was kind of a place at UNR where you paid fees and submitted forms. We felt that that wasn't enough. We had to do some centralized things to try to develop a larger, more talented, and more diverse graduate ranks. And so we've made really good progress. We've increased the number of doctoral students by 41% over that time span and increased the total graduate enrollment by 30%.
Thank you. Kate Corgan for the record. So what you'll see in the slide in front of you is that statewide we have increased our doctoral headcount over these 8 years by almost 38% and our overall graduate student headcount by almost 16%. Now, as at UNR, UNLV also has made a renewed commitment to invest in graduate education. Ours happened in just before around 2010, and during the last decade or so, we have invested in a number of different ways, like UNR, to expand graduate education and make sure that our graduate college was serving students from the very beginning of their recruitment and admissions journey all the way through graduation. And in the process, we have grown our graduate profile significantly. So at UNLV, we've increased our doctoral graduates by 35%, largely because we have recommitted our faculty and our resources on campus to really grow our doctoral enterprise and increase our degree conferrals. But we didn't do this at the expense of our master's students. At the same time, we continued to grow our master's programs at a rate of about 3%. So we had continued growth. Our master's programs have always been quite large. We've also expanded graduate certificates, which is a really new area in lots of ways, but we started certificates about 5 or 6 years ago, and we have increased our certificate enrollment about 335%. We have about 42 graduate certificates now, and this is important because these do two things. They allow our existing graduate students to diversify and do interdisciplinary work, to add a grad minor, if you will, and at the same time, they're a pathway in for students who aren't sure if graduate school is for them, but who want to try it, take some classes, and those credits then can apply towards their degree. So on both campuses, we're doing lots of innovative kind of programming to not just expand enrollment, but to better support our graduate students. There we go. One of the most exciting things and the things that we're happiest about is not just that we're growing enrollment, which is great, and we do celebrate that, but that we've simultaneously increased diversity on both campuses pretty significantly. And so the slide before you shows a pretty incredible story of diversification in the last 8 years in particular. So what you'll see is that overall, we have grown in all but two categories. Our American Indian, American Native and our Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander have declined a bit. Those have always been small populations, and we did see some decline. Part of that is attributable to the change in the state benefits for American Indians whose tribal lands cross into Nevada. They used to get an in-state tuition waiver, and we lost that for some years. As you know, at the last legislative session, that came back. So we're hoping to then do better recruiting more American Indian and American Native students. But our Asian, Black, Hispanic, and international students have increased significantly. You can see the overall percentages on the screen. At UNLV, we've gone up 47% in our Asian students, 17% in Black graduate students, 75% increase in Hispanic students, and 24% increase in international students. But more important than these numbers is what's behind them, right? We're incredibly proud of our diversity. And as you know, UNLV is one of the top five most diverse universities in the country. As such, our aspirational goal is to mirror our undergraduate population at the graduate level. And while we don't have exactly the same breadth of diversity yet at the graduate level, we aspire to get there, and this clearly shows we're making good strides. So I will let Dean Zay comment on their diversity.
Okay. Thank you, Kate. Yes, I think one of the things that I'm most proud of during my tenure as graduate dean is increasing diversity. to sort of disaggregate these data to some extent. We've increased American Indian, Alaska Native students by 56%. We've increased Asian students by 73%. We've increased Hispanic students by 120%, Black students by 142%, international students by 34%, Pacific Islanders by 33%, and white students by 5%. So across the board, more students, and particularly, UNLV started with a lot more diverse graduate ranks than we did. So really what I'm proud of is our trajectory. We're not finished. We're still working towards achieving parity and representation at the graduate ranks, which would really distinguish our university from any other, I think, in the country. So, but we've really made good progress on this, and it has been very intentional. We've initiated a number of new programs like the GradFit recruitment program, GradVenture program. We also have a grant, Innovations in Graduate Education grant from National Science Foundation to increase the retention of first-gen and underrepresented students. And that's yours. Thank you.
Kate Corrigan, for the record. So now, standing before you are two graduate deans at major research universities, so we're going to turn to the research for a moment. So we turn to the Council of Graduate Schools for this report. The Council of Graduate Schools is the preeminent organization in the United States for graduate deans, their leadership teams, graduate schools, and universities to not just study and understand graduate education and to improve our profile nationally, but to support our students to success. And CGS even does research and takes that to DC where they're housed and lobbies on behalf of us for graduate students. So in this particular report, which is called PhD Completion and Attrition, Findings from Exit Surveys and Among PhD Completers, they basically asked students who had recently graduated with a doctoral degree, what were the most important factors that contributed to their success? Now, graduate school, I won't say it's harrowing, and we certainly don't try to make it difficult, but for those of you who have attended graduate school, you may understand that it is indeed a challenge, right? That it's significantly different than a bachelor's degree, which is why it's so incumbent on us to support our students to success, and that means slightly different things at the graduate level. And what this data shows is that nationally, doctoral graduates tell us that the single most important factor that supported their success was financial support. Now, when we say financial support, this is different than undergraduate financial support. Graduate students aren't eligible for Pell, for example. Graduate students don't get subsidized loans. Every loan a graduate and professional student takes out is unsubsidized, right? So they are going into debt as they progress if they're taking out loans. So financial support means scholarships and fellowships for sure, but the most important cornerstone of financial support for graduate students are graduate assistantships, right? And these assistantships pay them a stipend to do up to 20 hours of work a week, and that's not just labor, that's training. That's studying and working and researching with their faculty mentors. The other two most important results in this research that I want to draw your attention to are the second and third, mentoring and advising. So mentoring and advising at the graduate level is really code for having great faculty. So when we have fantastic faculty on our campuses, they mentor and advise graduate students, and that's the mode of instruction for graduate students. It's a mentorship model. And so that is talking about having great faculty. And an important thing to note is the way that you recruit and retain fantastic faculty, certainly there's an alchemy there. There's lots of variables, but one of those variables is having really strong graduate programs that recruits and retains and graduates outstanding students. If faculty don't have great grad students to work with, it can impact their own professional career trajectory, their research, et cetera. Likewise, having great faculty is what attracts great students. So this is really a mutually reinforcing reality. So, and the third is really important, I think, especially to this group here, and that is familial non-financial support. And so what does that mean? It means having a social network, a safety net, if you will, of family and friends and community members who not just support you, you know, and not financially. Things like they walk your dogs when you're on campus doing, you know, experiments for a long day. They help out with cooking and cleaning. They support you emotionally. They listen and understand what you're going through as a graduate student. So most students and most folks don't recognize that this is such an important variable. And the absence of this creates heightened stress and challenges to student wellness. And I know that wellness is something that you all care about and we care about deeply on our campuses too. So we're providing lots of wellness support holistically for our students on both campuses to support them. But of course, underrepresented students, first-generation students, they have greater challenges in this category. And this data shows that how important that is to their success. There we go. All right, now we're going to pivot a bit, and we're going to talk about graduate assistant programs at UNLV and UNR.
So actually, graduate assistants come in three primary flavors. There are graduate teaching assistants, and those are the individuals who are primarily supported on state funding. In some cases, they actually teach undergraduate courses, for example, in the liberal arts, in the core humanities. Advanced graduate students, particularly doctoral students, will actually teach a course. In many other fields, particularly in STEM fields, they're involved in teaching laboratory sections or recitals and sort of studio sections. They provide the sort of one-on-one type interactions that our undergraduates need to really excel at our institutions. There are also graduate research assistants who typically are supported on grants and contracts, and they play a really fundamental role. You know, I actually do have a sort of a night job where I still do research, and I'm often in the building late at night, and the only one you will see there besides me is a graduate student. There aren't faculty working in labs at 9 o'clock at night. Those are graduate students. Those are the individuals who are actually at the sort of cutting edge of research. And they do a lot of different things, so both in STEM and non-STEM fields, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that in the next slides. And we also have a much smaller number of graduate project and professional assistants who provide us and support us in our professional development activities and also through outreach. So just to give you an idea of what these students are like, here's an example from UNR, Natalie Fetto, who actually completed her degree and she's now an assistant teaching professor at the University of Tampa. She's working on a PhD in chemistry. Chemistry teaches a lot of laboratory sections, so they have a large number of graduate assistants. And basically, this person, by the end of her career, was functioning as a faculty member at that sort of level. She taught a number of different courses, pretty complex and challenging courses to teach, and she did a stellar job. You know, we couldn't really fulfill our undergraduate teaching missions without these students.
Thank you. Kate Corgan for the record. The other graduate teaching assistant we'd like to introduce you to is Dustin Davis. Dustin is a friend from UNLV. He is a doctoral candidate in interdisciplinary health sciences. Interdisciplinary health sciences was our first interdisciplinary graduate degree on campus. We now have five. This has been one of the things we've been growing in recent years. And Dustin was an early student in our IHS doctoral program. As a student, he had a graduate assistantship that involved teaching responsibilities. He's been a teaching assistant for the Kinesiology 223 lab, which is a very hands-on. You can see in this photo, he's holding some bones. It's a very hands-on lab, and students just responded incredibly well to Dustin and his teaching style. He also was an instructor then for Kinesiology 391, a more advanced class, and he did so well, and the students gave such high evaluations that Dustin then competed for and was awarded the Outstanding Graduate Student Teaching Award Award in 2021. So we're incredibly proud of his accomplishments and the work he does with undergraduates. And that's an important part of graduate education, that they are also teaching, mentoring, and bringing up undergraduates with them. The other thing to share about Dustin is he served as a Grad Rebel Ambassador, sort of one of our best and brightest students on campus that helps us bridge the campus community divide and explain graduate education. But Dustin also had a graduate assistantship for a year with us in the Graduate College. And the reason is because he interviewed and said, I'm interested in wellness, and physical wellness is my specialization, but people can't be physically well unless they're holistically well. And so he ended up taking the graduate assistantship position with us specifically to develop financial wellness training for our graduate students. And we've now rolled out 3 digital badges and a graduate certification, all free to our students. And Dustin was really instrumental to helping us put that together. So now we'll switch over to graduate research assistants. This is the second category that Dean Zay talked about. Our graduate research assistants do just that. They focus their time and energy on doing research that supports faculty scholarship and publishing and grants, as well as their own work. From UNLV, I would like to introduce you to George W. Kajumba. Mr. Kajumba is in the Civil and Environmental Engineering program, where he is a doctoral student. He has presented and published research on new materials that treat wastewater. He works on reclaiming water to support food production all over the world, but especially in third world countries. He was a participant invited to Europe to be part of the 70th Lindau Nobel Laureate meeting. This is something that very few graduate research assistants get to do. He's been a top 20 graduate student awardee in environmental chemistry from the American Chemical Society. He has a number of other national awards under his belt already. He was part of 19 participants in 2021 for the Black Trailblazers in Engineering program in the U.S. So he really stands out and exemplifies the kind of student we're here talking to you about today.
Sorry.
No problem. Okay. I'm going to go backwards. Yes. There are certain fields that have a lot of access to research funding, many STEM fields, public health, and many of our faculty support their students on these research assistantships where they can, advance the field and also outreach to the community. And probably one of the best examples of that at UNR is Sarah Hartzell, who before the pandemic was working on opioid misuse and urine drug testing, and then during the pandemic, she transitioned to looking at the effect of COVID on the mental health. And obviously, these are really, really important fundamental issues. We know that technological advances in the medical fields get a lot of attention, and they're really important, but it's public health that really has been primarily responsible for increasing human longevity. Finally, in the last category, the graduate program and professional developmental assistance, I'd like to feature Raven Tipton here, not only because Raven is an outstanding individual, but also it gives you an idea of the kinds of professional development programs that our university runs. And actually, when I moved into the dean position, I looked at other universities like Stanford, UC Berkeley, UC Davis, and UNLV for trying to develop a professional development series for UNR, because those institutions were doing really great jobs. And we now have about 15 to 20 workshops per semester, and Raven helps us run those. She's incredibly efficient, well-organized, while she's also doing her research in marriage and family therapy.
Thank you. Kate Corgan for the record. And so our professional development assistant that we're featuring today is Jasmine Gray. And it's interesting because we each selected our students for these categories without comparing notes. And it turns out that Jasmine Gray does a very similar job as Raven Tipton. In fact, I would like to introduce them after this, I've decided. So Jasmine Gray is a master's student in civil and environmental engineering. She is already publishing and presenting on her research. So she is a very strong researcher. major, but she selected to take a GA that would allow her to work in professional development to support what we call the Grad Academy. This is a wing of our graduate college that provides leadership, professional, and career development support free of charge to all graduate and professional students. And so in her role with the Grad Academy, Jasmine facilitates professional development workshops, curates panel questions. She does all the assessment for all of our workshops, and we do more than 60 a year. And she works on assessment and oversight of our more than a dozen different programs for our graduate students. The other wonderful thing about Jasmine is she is a two-time Rebel. She earned her undergraduate degree with us and is back, of course, for the master's. And that is pretty typical. About one-third of our graduate students have come to us from UNLV undergraduate programs. So we definitely still remain an access institution. All right, now we're going to pivot again and talk a little bit about how we fund GAs on both of our campuses.
Okay, this is a rather busy slide, and we're probably running behind, so I'm going to move through this really quickly. I think the primary point I'd like to make in this slide is that graduate assistants are funded from multiple sources. Just under half of our graduate assistants in terms of FTE are funded through state appropriations, and essentially all of those individuals are graduate teaching assistants. Then about 40% of our graduate assistants are funded through grants and contracts. Also, we have some supported through self-supporting budgets and through donor and gifts, but primarily it's state and grants and contracts. Now, there's a little bit of a different pattern in UNLV, which relates to a higher STEM focus at our institution, which I'll let Kate talk about.
Thank you. Yes, just quickly, we have very similar funding sources, although we do fund a higher percentage of our graduate assistants at UNLV through state funding. 80% of those students that are the big red block there of 60% state funded, 80% of those are teaching our undergraduates as teaching assistants, as instructors in classrooms, mentoring undergraduates, et cetera. And the other 20% are involved in the research endeavor. So as you heard from Dr. Zay, UNR has a slightly larger STEM profile, science, technology, engineering, and math at the doctoral level. And so that's why they're slightly heavier on externally funded grant GAs. That said, UNLV has been increasing in that category, and just in the past year, we've added 50 externally funded grant GAs, and that's largely a reflection of the COVID pandemic. So if there's one positive to come out of that, it's that our graduate students have been funded at a higher rate through federal funding opportunities, and that they're working very much on the front lines of the science and public health around the pandemic. So we're now going to turn and do a deeper dive into both UNR and UNLV's specific GA programs and funding.
Okay. Again, this is a rather busy slide, but I think the main point to focus on in this slide is that nothing much has happened since the fall of 2018. So starting in 2014, we were able to increase the amount of stipend, and we have steadily increased the number of graduate teaching assistant positions supported by the state. We did this because the state was recovering from the Great Recession back in 2010 and 2011. Enrollment was increasing. Our budgets were looking pretty solid. So we're able to add a large number of new positions. We're also able to increase the stipend. But since 2018, reduced state funding, it's been very difficult for us to either increase stipends or increase the number of positions. We'll talk about why it's really important to do both of those things. Another point to make from this slide is that we used to pay doctoral students and master's students the same amount. We did decide to differentiate stipends in 2018. So that the master's stipend is a couple of thousand dollars lower than the PhD stipend. It's a question of market forces and equity. This is a tiered system, but it's a really small level of tierness. Not much of a difference. There are just some graduate programs, for example, in cell and molecular biology, where you simply cannot attract a graduate student unless you pay a higher stipend. And that differentiation is partially reflected in our different funding levels for different programs. We've also tried to do other things to attract students. We have some foundation support in the amount of about $750,000 a year for fellowships and scholarships. And we also use other funds to, we've created a fellowship program that's quite generous. We only have six of those, but they are really impactful because in many cases, the students who receive those fellowships are also students who are supported by programs like the National Science Foundation Graduate Research Fellowship Program. So they get 1 year of fellowship from us, and then they get 3 years from NSF. So it's a really good investment. Oh, that's right. I don't have to switch for a while. So there's a lot of good news here, I think, and a lot of encouraging signs. But what we're really concerned about is what happens in the future. We're really, really concerned that if we don't do something about increasing our stipends and increasing the number of positions, you know, we're going to hit the floor in terms of our ability to attract and retain graduate students. As you are all aware, rents have been rising. There actually was a pretty large rise in rental costs in Reno in 2017 due to the sort of attracting high-tech industries to the Reno region. But then last year, we saw an 18% increase. So if you think back to that previous slide, we haven't had any increases in the stipend since 2018, but we've had about a 33% increase in rent. And really, that's the single most significant cost to a graduate student. So here's a table. You've already sort of seen these data in the sense that we have a tiered system of graduate stipends ranging from the master's at $16,000 for 10 months. And really, we provide assistantships only for 10 months. And so if students need additional funding over the summer, they usually have to seek funds from their departments. Some are able to do so, or from their principal investigator. Some are able to do so, others are not. And so when you compare that to the average cost of a rental in Reno, you can see that there's nothing much left after that monthly stipend.
Thank you. Kate Corgan for the record. Similar to UNR, UNLV has seen some incremental change in the last decade or so towards improving our GA stipends and packages. We had a very small increase. It was our first doctoral stipend increase in 2012. For at least 12 years, we couldn't find records before that. It gives you a sense of the stagnation that had built up. That change lifted doctoral stipends from $12,000 to $13,000. So it was a very incremental change. And $15,000 for those most advanced doctoral students who were what we call ABD, all but dissertation. We didn't have much change again until we were able in 2016 to move to market-based doctoral stipends. So we had an investment from the university that was fairly significant. And what it allowed us to do is work with the campus to identify how to invest these funds to support doctoral stipend increases fairly and appropriately. And as you heard from Dean Zay, STEM fields generally get the highest stipends and are the most competitive. So what we decided to do is do a sliding scale. So we invested in new minimum stipend rates that varied by discipline. So then in 2016, the lowest stipend for doctoral students would be $15,000, and then the highest minimum stipend would be about $20,000, $21,000. Then in 2018, we were able to increase master's from their $10,000 a year, which is definitely not a living wage, up to $11,250. So again, a small incremental but important change for our master's students. And at the same time, we were able to do something else. So GA packages are not just just stipends, it's other benefits too. So in 2018, we were able to offer full registration fees for all of our GAs up to 9 credits per semester. So that helped keep us a little more competitive and took a little bit of burden off our students. And then this fall, I'm very proud to say that President Whitfield and Provost Heavey were able to work with us and provide 100% of health insurance costs, which is several $1,000 a year per student, to all of our graduate assistants. So our GAs now have tuition coverage and health insurance coverage, but their stipends continue to stagnate. And so what you'll see is a parallel story. So as our stipends were incrementally increasing, but still remaining quite low, rental rates were increasing significantly. And so it's a very parallel story to the one you saw in Reno, and that is year-over-year increases since 2015 of 4, 5, 6% a year. And then in 2021, that was a 17% increase in rental rates. And what we're talking about are not overall rental rates. We're talking about average one-bedroom apartments, right? And then let's compare that to what our GA stipends look like. And so on the left of this slide, what you'll see are our GA levels. We have doctoral students, terminal masters. That's a very small N. We don't have a lot of those students. And master students. About 60% of our GAs are doctoral, about 40% are masters. And you can see that the average weighted stipend there is less than $16,000, with our masters being the average being about $11,600. And our doctoral only about $17,950. So our stipends are low. And on the right, you can see how that compares to the monthly cost of an average one-bedroom apartment in Las Vegas. For our master's students, there's a significant gap. Their GA stipend package does not even come close to covering the cost of just their rent. For our doctoral students, for those at the minimum stipend end, their stipend doesn't cover their rent. For those at the maximum doctoral stipend, they have a little bit left every month, but certainly not enough to cover utilities, transportation, the rising cost of food and gas, et cetera. And so what you see is that at both the University of Nevada, Reno and UNLV, that our incremental change has made a difference, but it hasn't been enough, and that the rate of inflation, particularly in housing, has far outpassed our stipends. So where does this lead us? So I drew the short straw on this one, and so I'm going to explain this seemingly complicated slide to you, and I will apologize in advance because it breaks every rule of good PowerPoint etiquette. But nonetheless, what you see here are two bar graphs. The one on the left is for UNLV, the one on the right is for UNR, and along the bottom are our peer and aspirational peer universities. And we wanted to look at our stipends compared to theirs to get a sense of how they compare. And so the black bar across the middle at the zero line is exactly where we would be if our stipends were the same. So if our stipend at UNLV were the same as University of North Texas, that first one, we would be right at the black line. If the line goes up and is green, as you see with Portland State and University of New Mexico, that green bar going up indicates that those two universities actually pay a little bit less to their GAs than we do at UNLV. So we can feel good about competing with Portland State and University of New Mexico in some disciplines. But all the red lines that are dripping down, unfortunately, are indicative of the gap between those universities' GA stipends and ours at UNLV. And I will note that our colleagues at UNR have UC Berkeley and UC Davis on their chart on the right. Those are the longest bars. We excluded those from the UNLV because they went off the bottom of the chart. So you can see that what we're talking about is not just a problem in Nevada. It's a problem when we look at trying to recruit the best and brightest students to come here and hopefully then stay here. We're competing against these kinds of peer institutions, and they are far surpassing us on their GA stipends. So.
Yeah, I'll just add one further comment. Another way that we looked at it was to look at the value of the stipend after subtracting the cost of rent. And so in the 17 institutions that we looked at, UNR didn't do too badly. We were sort of in the lower third when you just looked at the stipend amount, but when you subtracted off the rent, we were third to the bottom. So we were really doing poorly. Okay, so here is our proposal, and this is in President Sandoval's request to ENCHI. What we'd like to do is to increase the value of the stipend over the 2 years of the next biennium. This gives you an idea of the overall cost of that and the number of students involved, so that over the 2 years, we are requesting a $2,000 increase in the stipend, $1,000 in each of the 2 years for doctoral students. That would be a $700,000 ask. We'd also like to increase the stipend for master's students. You know, master's programs are not as competitive as doctoral programs. Doctoral students have more experience. There is some justification for differentiating the stipend amount. But I think an important thing to point out is that master's students often transition into doctoral programs, and they provide a kind of a stepping stone for first-generation and underrepresented students. So we think this increase in the master's stipend is very highly justified. The other thing that we're requesting is additional lines, 88 additional doctoral lines, 44 in each of the 2 years. When you look at Nevada relative to other states, we have the lowest level of doctoral and graduate professional degrees in the Mountain West, and also if you include the Pacific Coast. Nationwide, we're, I think, ranked 47th or 48th with 9%. Washington, for example, has about twice the proportion that we do. And it is really important to the state, to the economic development of the state. We think particularly in northern Nevada that we have a highly trained workforce that can attract industry. So this is a fairly significant ask, but we think it's a very good return on investment. It will promote the interests of the state and also help us recruit and retain the best faculty that we possibly can.
Thank you. And so in the interest of time, I will just note that our proposal at UNLV almost exactly parallels the request from UNR. So we're coming forward with parallel requests. The one difference I would draw your attention to is at the very top of this slide. The first request we're making is to get our master's and doctoral stipends up to parity with UNR where they are now. So despite the fact that UNLV has had a large number of graduate programs and significant graduate growth, the exigencies of budgets over the years and history have resulted in this differential GA amounts between our two R1 universities. And as a result, what we'd like to ask is for your consideration to help bridge that gap and have both of our R1 universities on par. And then we're asking for the same two-year investment to raise doctoral stipends by $2,000 over the biennium and master's students by $1,000. So that would keep that parity that we are striving to get between the two R1 universities. And likewise, we are asking also for the 25% increase in the number of funded doctoral GAs in the state. You heard about the need for a highly educated workforce in Northern Nevada, and we echo that sentiment in Southern Nevada. The pandemic has certainly taught us about the importance of having a highly diversified economy, and we know the cultural and social benefits of having a highly educated leadership workshop and that leadership workforce. And that's indeed what doctoral graduates bring to the state. So for us, 25% of our current doctoral students is about 132 new positions. And so our ask is about $7.5 million over the biennium as part of our university request. So thank you so much for your time and consideration. We greatly appreciate your attention, and we are more than happy to answer questions. Chair Geddes, if you'd like, we are also happy to invite Nicole Thomas and Matt Hahn, our GPSA presidents at the two universities, in case you have questions for them as well.
Thank you. We might. Depends on the time that we have left available. But I appreciate you working with them as you're developing this program out, and I'm glad they're active in your discussions. Any questions or comments? Regent Perkins.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Geddes. My question is, I know it's all about funding, and I saw the pie where a lot of it came from state funding. Is there any sources that we're like leaving on the table that can fund this, or have those been examined and maximized?
There are. Thank you, Chair Regent Perkins.
There are a few options, and so we are certainly working very hard to increase our external grant funding that comes to faculty so that faculty can then hire graduate assistants on their grants. We are offering, for example, next fall, we're rolling out comprehensive grant writing training workshops for our graduate students to help them write dissertation and doctoral fellowships and to increase our National Science Foundation graduate research fellowship numbers. So all of that is in the works, but that unfortunately won't be enough, and getting external funding might increase the number of funded GAs, but it doesn't address that fundamental challenge of having low stipends for all of our GAs. I will also add that we have some innovative programs to get donor support to fund some graduate assistantship opportunities both on and off campus, but again, even though that will certainly grow, it won't address the comprehensive problem here. Thank you.
So I'd like to echo all of that and maybe just add a couple of additional things. We are certainly trying to expand internship opportunities, paid internship opportunities, and working with our president and vice president for research and innovation on that. The other point I think I'd like to make is that state-funded lines are really a force multiplier, because in many graduate programs, faculty are kind of reluctant to take on a doctoral student unless they know they can have 4 to 6 years of support. So if your department or your program has a sort of minimum number of graduate teaching assistant lines, those can act as a buffer so that the faculty feel comfortable in taking on students, and you know, the assignment of the state lines and the grant and contract lines can be used to really sort of maximize the number of students you can have in the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I have a comment and a couple of questions.
Just, if I may.
Sorry.
Now it's gone. How important is it for our R1 status to maintain and grow our grad students?
For UNR, it's fundamental. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the biggest, so with the Carnegie, it's really, size matters a lot. I mean, there is a per capita component to it, but it really is fairly trivial in terms of its overall contribution. And so we're a relatively small university. And so, you know, we really have to work hard on the number of PhD graduates per year. That's absolutely critical for us. If we were to lose R1, it would probably be because of graduate earned doctorates.
Just a follow-up request on the information, then we'll go to Regent Del Carlo. On that slide where you talked about all the percentages, there were no ends there as to how many actual people that is. So if we could get a follow-up piece document on that, that would be great. And I just wanted to ask President Acharya, I know you fund some of those. Were those included in the report based on if they're at UNR or UNLV, or how does that fit into it?
Thank you, Chair Geddes. This is Kabir Acharya, DRI. We try to match what the universities offer. So if I think it's about time for the students to get a little bit parity, both campuses, as well as also, I mean, the increase is huge, the cost rental, right? So we're absolutely supportive of what they're saying, and we also like to increase our students working on those campuses, and we'll do our best.
Thank you. We'll address the budget issue when we get to the budget item and the request. So we'll probably hold on that in this meeting. And honestly, I'm not sure the success rate of state funding. And I think that's back to Regent Perkins' question, is how can we build it if the state won't fund it? And we know we need it. It's clearly demonstrated we need it. I'm just not sure of how that goes. So, and that ties into my last one, which just looking at, are there things that we can do specifically without a state ask, like do we have policies that we need to change? Can we raise limits based on NIH or NSF funding? Do we have any limitations that are strictly within our purview outside of the state funding?
Yeah, if
I may take this one. Nicole Thomas, GPSA president for the record. Thank you for that question, because I very much have the same sentiment of what happens if this fails at the state level. I am personally trying to get graduate students to advocate and be a part of that legislative discussion. I know in the past it has been more successful when we have had students go directly to them. So what I would ask of you all is, in that state discussion, to fully support this, with the hopes that they understand the dire need where if we come together as an NC body, which is why I think it's also important for us to come together as UNLV and UNR specifically. With that being said, I'm not entirely sure if there are any regulations that cap the funding currently. I do know that the vast majority of our funding is state funded, which is why I think we need to make the argument that they have to increase it on their side in order for us to be able to succeed. But our graduate students are fully in support of this, and I could, like, if you need 50 students up there making public comment, I could get you 50 students making public comment. So thank you.
Thank you. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I'm not on this committee, but first of all, it was really a great presentation, and I love the cooperation between our two R1 institutions, just showing that we're just one Nevada, and how you're helping each other really says a lot. And I guess this is maybe a question for you, Andrew Klinger. I know you're reading over there. When we are building our, when we've built our budget, the time I've been on the board, this is the third time go around, have we been turned down for increased graduate funding in the past? This is my third legislative session, say, next year.
For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer, since I've been here, we have not asked. So we haven't been turned down, but we also haven't asked.
Okay. That's what I was wondering, if we'd even asked. And do either of you know, Deans, if how long it's been since we've made the ask? Because it looks like we're looking at $11 million to get us up to parity.
Kay Corgan, for the record, I have no recollection of this having been brought to the state legislature at any point. So at some point, perhaps, but not in recent memory, not in the last several years.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Nicole Thomas, for the record again. Our graduate students have gone up there before as part of GPSA, and they were, like, advocating for it. But the issue was that there wasn't a specific ask, so the legislature wasn't really able to do anything about it. So they were told, hey, we can't really do anything about this now, and that was kind of the feedback that they received. And I think that was 3 years ago, I want to say. So that's where we're at right now.
Okay, thank you. I think it's really important that we all get behind you. Really, and kind of we do our CIP, we rank things, and this has got to be, hopefully, Regents, this has got to be up there with us. Our graduate students have been talking to us all year long that I know of. You've both been very active, and thank you so much for this presentation and the knowledge you've shared.
Thank you. Seeing no other comments and questions, we'll wrap up this agenda item, and thank you for all the great work, and keep sending us the data. Appreciate it. And with that, we'll close out that item and go to public comment. Is there any public comment in ELCO? Oh, I skipped new business? New business? Is there any public comment in ELCO? Is there any public comment in Reno?
Yes, there is, Chair Geddes.
Thank you, Kent Urban, K-E-N-T-E-R-B-I-N. I'd just like to echo this, all the points made in this presentation about graduate student stipends and supportive graduate students and how important it is. If you want nice things like R1 status, you have to pay for it, and the revenue streams have to be there. Grad students aren't asking for anything more than subsistence-level stipends, but they have to live. In chemistry, you know, I was a chair in the mid-2000s. We were regularly cannibalizing the number of graduate student positions in order to pay just barely enough to attract enough graduate students. So, you know, we reduced the numbers that we could bring in order to be able to attract good students. And finally, there's a really big connection between being competitive and attracting graduate students and bringing in the diverse students that will fulfill the pipeline for diverse faculty in the future. And that's not just a Nevada thing, UNR or UNLV thing, but a national thing that we need to be competitive to bring in the broad student, diverse population, graduate students that will then become, as well as going out into the workforce, some of them will be going to academia and increase the diversity of our ranks at our universities. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, come on board for public comment in Las Vegas. I will say in the written public comment we got, we did get one on this topic, and that's been entered into the record. Proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Taisa Lachenko, Taisa Lychenko. I'm the internal vice president of GSA at UNR. Today I'm here to ask you how many of you have children in the NSHE system, how many of them are specifically at UNR, and how many of your kids wonder where their meal will come from or if it will come at all that day. Now consider that in this case, I'm talking about over 3,000 young adults. According to our recent GSA survey of roughly about 500 UNR graduates, on average, our graduates are between 26 and 35 years old. 17% are providers for their dependents. 46.9% have struggled with food insecurity, with responses from sometimes to always. And 62.4% have experienced housing insecurity, with responses from sometimes to always. Now, please take in consideration that these are the people that are teaching your courses, from grading homework to lecturing for class sizes of up to 300 future intellects at a time. And some of them go home not knowing if they will make it through the day tomorrow. It is not a surprise that our retention rate is far from 100%. Frankly, some don't want to live like that, to make that much of a sacrifice for two to five years, sometimes six, sometimes seven. On top of that, with little prospect of getting a job outside of industry post-graduation. Now imagine your child having to live through that. There's plenty of data shared today in this meeting regarding stipends and housing costs, but I ask you to please leave this meeting with the mindset of being the leaders our students depend on you to be. In a way, these are your kids. They need your help. You're the force that can actually change their future. Please use that responsibility wisely. Thank you for your attention, and I bid you all a productive rest of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Kinkini Sengupta representing University of Nevada, Reno, and I come up here to please bring to your attention the fact that graduate students need your immediate help. A graduate master's student makes up to $1,600 per month, 20-hour week assistantship, and a graduate PhD student in STEM makes $1,900 per month, 20-hour week. I, as an international student pursuing master's in journalism, am making $1,073 per 15-hour week. My visa does not permit me to work outside. I pay $665 for housing, one of the cheapest options I could manage, leaving me with $408 to barely finish the month with bills to pay, grocery, and miscellaneous expenses, which I am still to consider. Rents are at an all-time high. A News 4 article dated 2021 says Reno is the top 10 cities for a year-over-year rent increase, rates being projected at 38.5% from 2020 for one bedroom, eighth highest in the country. In the previous quarterly Board of Regents meeting, you voted for increase of rent at Ponderosa Village by 4.5% increase for the fiscal year 2022 to 2023. I don't need to remind you that. Can you suggest exactly how we are expected to maintain position as an R1 Carnegie institution when we cannot make basic ends meet? Some of us do not even have money to pay rent, buy clothes and boots for the changing weather. Many of us have been sharing apartments with almost 4 to 5 people during extreme COVID surge. How can we concentrate on graduate student research when we must continuously think about how to make ends meet? It is at a stage where we are beyond graduate, in-state, out-of-state, or international student issue. It is a student condition, and I urge you to take please urgent notice of the same. We are at breaking point. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other public comment in Las Vegas, the ARSA committee is adjourned.